Public schools are increasingly chaotic and undermine Christian children's faith. We need to rebuild our Lutheran schools to provide a truly Christian alternative. Redeemer Classical School is rebuilding this Christ-focused education in Fort Wayne, Indiana, teaching students to wonder at God's creation and to love their neighbors. We need you to help us give children this faithful Christian education. Donations to Redeemer Classical School go directly to providing scholarships. Visit fortwayneclassical.com/give.
What you people discovered is bigger than we ever thought possible.
How big is that thing?
It was the largest shark that ever existed.
A living fossil.
Thought to have been extinct for over 2 million years.
Wrong.
That's the trailer for the movie The Meg. It's a shark film, and as you can tell from the trailer, it's a film about a big shark. Back in 1975, the big shark was, what, 20 feet long? I think that's how big it was. That was considered a big shark. Not anymore. That would be a small shark by today's standards. And the budget that Jaws was made on back in 1975 is dwarfed by comparison to the budget of this movie. Budgets don't always mean good movies, though. We're going to be reviewing the movie The Meg. Pastor Ted Geese joins us on this Thursday afternoon. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
I remember watching Jaws, the kind of original shark movie, back in 1975, and I distinctly remember it being intensely frightening, the first part of the movie, when you didn't see much of the shark at all except for a ripple in the water or the dorsal fin sticking out of the water. And once the movie shifted to that action part where he was chewing people up and spitting them out, and you could see the shark, after his first appearance, it got a lot less scary for me. I was more scared by what I could not see, what was under the surface, so to speak. Does The Meg, the latest of about 1,000 shark movies, follow that formula for horror and thrills?
It follows the formula in that, you know, it doesn't show you much of the shark right off the bat, but it, you know, it's not that, it's not very successful. So, or, you know, here's the deal. So when you were a kid and you were watching that movie, or when you were a young person, you're watching Jaws, the thing that got you was your imagination. It, because what you're not seeing, then you're thinking about, and in your imagination, you're making it worse than it is. So there's that German proverb or something about the, you know, the wolf is always bigger in your imagination, kind of a thing. So that was what was working for that original Jaws film. And it's something that they do in horror films all the time. Like they, you know, they really hold off on showing the monster until nearer to the end of the film. Generally they do this. And usually it's because of years ago with practical effects, they couldn't make them look very real. So they had to play on suspense, because if they showed you too early, you wouldn't be frightened of it through the rest of the film. And actually, that was a problem that Steven Spielberg had when he was making Jaws, because there was some significant trouble getting the shark to do what, like for it to be the way they wanted it to be. Right. So in this case, though, the Meg, they have, you know, computer graphics and stuff and the computer generated special effects, and they can make the shark do kind of whatever they want, but that doesn't necessarily make it more convincing. So, you know, like I think that for me watching this movie, and maybe it's the result of watching a handful of other shark related films, it just wasn't really paying off. Maybe my imagination was elsewise occupied. I don't know, but it wasn't paying off for me in terms of the suspense and the build up part.
I think another element here, and this is just certainly only a question about choices they made with regard to the special effects. Sometimes you can make a shark so big that you stop believing that it's really that big. Does the Meg suffer from that?
Well, this is supposed to be a 70-foot megalodon shark, and so megalodon sharks are, you know, something from, you know, the history of humanity. They're extinct. They're not around today. The premise of the film is that there's kind of the deepest part of the ocean, what people think is the floor of the Mariana Trench, is actually just like a cloud layer, and that there's actually like a basement to the ocean, and down there these megalodon sharks have been breeding and living. And so it's kind of almost like a Loch Ness monster kind of a thing, a crypto, you know, kind of a thing. So you know, they get disturbed, they come up to the surface, but yeah, it's 70 feet long, 75 feet long, something like that. And of course the great white shark in Jaws was 25 feet long, so this is much bigger. This is the kind of shark that will just swallow you in one bite.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest reviewing the movie The Meg. When we come back, what's the plot?
Educating a new generation of Lutherans, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
You'll find engaging illustrations, colorful layouts, and helpful charts in the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues, Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition.
Well, Saturday night at 8 o'clock, I know where I'm gonna go. I'm gonna pick my baby up and take her to the picture show.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We are reviewing the movie The Meg. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest on this Thursday afternoon, August the 23rd. So, Ted, let's get into the plot of the film. How would you describe it?
It's really an action film more than it's a horror movie, actually. It basically follows Jason Statham's character. Jason Statham's character, he plays a guy named Jonas, Captain Jonas Taylor. And like a lot of these movies, actually very similar to Skyscraper with Dwayne The Rock Johnson, there's like a scene at the very beginning of the movie that shows them, you know, at their prime doing their work. And in this case, he's a deep sea rescue guy. So he's down in the bottom of the ocean and he's rescuing people out of a submarine, and the submarine's getting attacked by something. He makes a decision. He gets them out of there, but he leaves two of his friends behind, and now he's a haunted soul. So there's usually this opening scene where your main action hero guy has like this thing that happens badly, and now he's a haunted soul and he has to redeem himself through the rest of the film. And this is what happens. He gets called in because, again, there's been this accident at the bottom of the ocean, this time deep, 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 deep down, and it turns out that it's his ex-wife down there. So he has a reason to go back. Plus, they think it might be that shark that he thought it was the first time. So now it's kind of personal. So he goes down there to rescue her and the other people. And then it turns into this kind of, we've got to stop this shark that's now come up from the depths of the ocean before it starts wreaking havoc. So they switch from this big laboratory, kind of an ocean laboratory, to getting on a boat, a big boat. It's a big shark, so you need a big boat. So then the movie kind of follows them trying to, you know, stop the shark before it gets to larger populations of people.
So what is there's always some kind of little preachy message, the worse the movie, the lower the production values, or maybe it has great production values, but it's just not a great movie. Usually the preachier the message. What's the message in this one that you can't help but hear screamed in your ear?
Right. Well, yeah, this is basically a B film. So it is like what you're saying, it's a B movie, except the problem is that it's a B film. The way the script's written, the acting, all of that kind of stuff, for the most part, Jason Statham's pretty good. But it's a $130 million budget B film, which means that it has a lot of flash and there are parts of it that look really good, but it's still kind of corny and you know, light. It's a very, very, very deep ocean, very shallow story. So what the part that you're thinking of is that they kind of want to have their cake and eat it too. So on the one hand, they want to have the shark chomp through things and all of that. But on the other hand, they also want to have serious moments where they talk about ecology and, you know, like taking care of the ocean and the dangers of science in terms of like the dangers of the way man can be a monster kind of a thing towards nature. So this kind of comes up. And there's kind of two things going on with that. One thing is that, you know, there's a kernel of trueness in that if you dig a little deeper into it. But it kind of, because the film is so shallow, I don't know that very many people will have that introspective kind of moment where they think about, you know, just the actual nature of humanity in our fallen state and the way in which we have not been good stewards of the natural world. I don't know if they're going to think about it in biblical terms. I think that they're going to maybe think of it more like the kind of thing you might hear from Greenpeace, let's say.
So does this kind of follow the, I call it the Godzilla plot, which is we've done this to ourselves. We created this monster by raping and pillaging the environment.
Not exactly. That is like, there is a way in which this is kind of a Godzilla kind of thing, because Godzilla comes up out of the ocean and it wreaks havoc. But it's also not like Jurassic Park either, where they've decided to use their scientific know-how to bring this back from extinction. It's just literally something that was already always there lurking under the surface, and it doesn't really care who you are or what's going on. It just wants to eat. So that's where it's a little bit different. It's a more clear kind of man versus nature kind of story. Like, for instance, there was a film a number of years ago set in, I think it was actually shot in Canmore, and in it there was a big grizzly bear. So it started with just being out in, like, getting lost in the wilderness kind of a thing. And then from there, it turned into this bear hunting these people, big grizzly bear. And I remember watching this movie, which I'm trying to remember the name of off the top of my head. Oh yeah, The Edge from 1997. I was living in Halifax, and there's this big grizzly bear in it. And the grizzly bear, it's not that they did anything to cause the grizzly bear to want to eat them. The grizzly bear is just being a grizzly bear and it wants to eat them. And then they survive the grizzly bear by killing it. And the people in Halifax, Nova Scotia, who don't have grizzly bears, it was a Sunday afternoon screening, and they literally broke into applause. Like, they were so tense about the whole thing watching the film. So it's really more like that. It's just that this megalodon, this shark, just wants to eat things. There is no revenge on its part. And it's not really, they don't really couch it in terms of, you know, this is our punishment kind of a thing. Maybe that would be even more interesting, but they don't go exactly that direction.
When you say it's a B film, I think most people, that's like obscenity. You know what it is when you see it, but it's hard to define. How would you describe what makes this a B film? If not, it used to be the budget, but obviously that's not the case here.
I think it's just the shallowness of characterization. And also there's a lot of characters that are, you know, tropey characters, like, or like they're kind of checking off all the little boxes of what they need. So for instance, they have one character that's kind of in these kinds of movies is a little more ubiquitous, is the panicky African-American fellow who's saying stuff like, well, you know, this wasn't in the job description. And then it turns out he doesn't know how to swim. And he's like, of course, like, you know, on a marine research laboratory, like, he should probably know how to swim. But like at every point, he's constantly saying, you know, like, so now we're leaving, we're not going to do this. Like, he's supposed to be the voice of reason, but he's very panicky. And oddly enough, this kind of happens more often in these kinds of films, like that kind of character. So they have, like, overall, they're constantly just, it's like little tiny storytelling shortcuts too. Like, you know, as soon as a character says that, you know, I'm writing a letter to my wife, and he hands the letter to a friend, well, that guy's dead. Like, he's not making it out of this, right? So, you know, you kind of, they're telegraphing in the things that are going to happen rather loudly, and you just know. So the things that would instantly turn this film into a B film is that if it was $13 million budget in today's market, and it didn't have Jason Statham, and it or Rainn Wilson from The Office, who plays a wisecracking billionaire. And really then, you know, just had like a bunch of actors that people really don't know very well. That would instantly take this with a slightly like less convincing special effects. It would just bring it all down to the true B film kind of category. Had some success in their planning for the film. You know, the producing of the film obviously got them where they needed to go. But it's still a B film, really.
The Jaws movie that all of these are all, as you say, they're all trying to put a little bit of the lightning back into the bottle by featuring large sharks. It had a trio of actors in it that brought not only their acting skill, but very unique, very salty kind of relationship on screen between their characters. You had Roy Scheider, you had Robert Shaw, and you had Richard Dreyfuss playing these three very different men, all stuck on the same boat, fighting the same terrible shark. I take it that this just doesn't have that caliber of performance attached to it.
It doesn't. I mean, and this is where like Jason Statham is quite entertaining actor in a lot of cases. And people know him. He's really your main guy. Like he's the actor that people are going to know coming into the film. There's a couple people who have been done a little bit of TV, that kind of thing. But really, he's the one people would know. So he's been in the Transporter franchise. He was in the Expendables action films. He was also in the Fast and the Furious films, some of those. So he's been in these big franchise film series, and he's really an action guy. So he's just throws himself into the action. The action is where he sparkles. Otherwise, he's quite gruff, and it's, you know, and it could be the same character from any of the other movies. He's has a history of being a diver in Olympic or, you know, Commonwealth game kind of stuff. So he looks convincing in the water, but he doesn't have maybe the acting chops that, you know, obviously somebody like Richard Dreyfuss has or Roy Scheider. And because of that, you know, it doesn't really get there in terms of the storytelling, in terms of the acting that is going to buoy up the storytelling.
Who is this film aimed at? Who would you say its audience is supposed to be?
Well, who watches Shark Week, I guess. I don't like most people who watch Shark Week probably know more about sharks than this film does. The probably teenage boys. I'm going to guess like somewhere in the range of, you know, 13 to 17 years old probably would be your key demographic for a movie like this. It is rated PG-13, so it's not an R-rated film. There is some blood in it. Some people do get eaten. It's not a hard R. It's not, you know, half as visceral as, you know, a movie that's more focused on the actual dangers of sharks. I mean, there are other shark films that people could see that are much more suspenseful, movies like Open Water, The Reef, or The Shallows. The Shallows was kind of a recent one. And that really focuses more on just like the suspense of being hunted by sharks. This kind of gets into, well, how would you kill a giant shark like that? And, you know, they have to be quite inventive. And at one point, you know, Captain Jonas Taylor actually punches the shark, you know. And so, yeah, this is what you're going to get when you're watching the film.
Does it have any moments? Does it have not moments that redeem the film entirely, moments where you say, okay, that was pretty good?
I mean, you know that it's coming. Like, okay, so either you've seen this movie, dear listener, or you have not. If you have not, and you hear this, you know, like, you kind of know what's going to happen before it happens anyways. But they kill the big megalodon shark, and they're celebrating on the back of their very big boat, and they've got it pulled up onto the boat, and they want to take pictures and everything like this, and it all seems like, you know, things are good. But, you know, you've looked at your watch, and you know that, you know, there's still time left in this movie. We haven't really even hit the third act yet. So you know what's going to happen next, and then there's another one, and it comes jumping out of the water and bites the big one that they'd killed off the back of their boat and drags it back into the ocean. And that's a fun moment, but you know it's coming when you're watching the film. Like, you can't not know.
On a scale from Jaws, and we could argue whether or not that's the best shark movie that was made or not. It was certainly a rather compelling book, and people kind of liked it. On the scale from Jaws to Sharknado, for Jaws being a 10 and Sharknado being a 1, where does The Meg fall?
Probably about a 4. It's got good production value in some cases. It's got a couple fun moments. It's got a couple cute characters. There's an 8-year-old girl in it who's pretty good in her scenes. But really, it's, you know, in the long run, it's going to be sitting back there about 4, I think, out of 10.
Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. And you could read his review of The Meg under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
I am looking at my courtesy copy of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August. It's Luther's Small Catechism Visual Edition. It looks a lot like those old books that teachers used to have for teaching. They'd open it up, it's ring bound, and it lays flat. They have all kinds of illustrations in here for every part and every detail of the 6 chief parts of Luther's Small Catechism, a unique resource from Concordia Publishing House. Find out more about it at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House and order Luther's Small Catechism Visual Edition, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. When we come back, part 4 of our series on the prophets and the divine tribunal, we'll look at Zephaniah and Haggai with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer.
Do you find yourself fixing the theology on store-bought greeting cards when you give them to friends and family? Put away that Sharpie. AdCruesome.com has greeting cards, art, jewelry, certificates, church banners, housewares, and all sorts of fantastic gifts that proclaim Christ crucified for us. Whether you're a value shopper or a collector, you'll find something at AdCruesome.com. That's AdCruesEM.com.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Our Savior Lutheran, Westminster, Massachusetts. Redeemer Lutheran, Fairhope, Alabama. St. Matthew Lutheran, Stony Plain, Alberta, Canada. Holy Cross Lutheran, Moline, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. St. John Lutheran, Racine, Wisconsin. Calvary Lutheran, Baltimore, Maryland. Reformation Lutheran, Afton, Missouri. Emmanuel Lutheran, Lima, Ohio. Risen Lord Lutheran, Taylorsville, Kentucky, Prince of Peace Lutheran, Crystal Lake, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran, Elmore, Ohio. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click support, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes a congregational sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.